will talk about end-of-life issues this hour and how families and doctors can best respect the wishes of an individual facing a terminal illness. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Monday, February the 20th. Our guest is the editor of the soon-to-be-published book, Having Your Own Say, Getting the Right Care When It Matters Most, which describes a way patients and family members and doctors can best handle these end-of-life issues. And we will welcome your questions and your experiences for him. Do you and your loved ones have a plan in place? Was there an end-of-life case in your family that went as smoothly as possible, or maybe rougher than necessary? Let us know. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Dr. Bud Hammes, Director of Medical Humanities at Gunderson Lutheran Health System in La Crosse, and he's director of its Respecting Choices program, which helps implement advanced care planning practices, and he is the editor of the new book, Having Your Own Say, Getting the Right Care When It Matters Most, which will be published next month, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So how, to be here, Joy. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. How big of a problem is it today that a patient's end-of-life wishes are not followed?
Well, I think I would reframe that just a little bit. I think most often the patient's wishes are either poorly formed or, you know, not completely formed, or they're just simply not known. So I think the biggest challenge we face from a national perspective is simply not knowing what the patient wants or not really understanding that patient's values and goals very clearly.
Mm-hmm. And why is this a problem?
Well, I think in our system, if we can call it a health system, we have assumptions about how care should be provided. And those are assumptions are if you get sick, you come to the hospital. And when you come to the hospital, we have certain protocols, procedures, standards of care. And patients easily get swept up, as well as their families, into that process. And while that works well when patients, I think, are reasonably healthy, because we all want to survive as long as possible, this book really focuses on the care of patients who have advanced illness, where wishes and values and goals, because of the patient's late-stage illness, have a lot of variability to them. And it becomes really important, particularly at this point in a person's life, to really sit down and talk about what's most important and how medical care can achieve the goals and values of that individual patient.
Why is it important to know these individual wishes?
Well, just because there's so much variability in the same or similar situation, two patients may have very different ideas about how much medical care they want or what medical care might be able to achieve for them. And we often fail to do that, so we put everyone through the same tract, which is to try to help them survive as long as possible, regardless of the suffering it inflicts, regardless of the cost it requires for that patient and family out of pocket. So there's a lot of things that healthcare typically doesn't consider for these patients, when in fact we know when we talk with patients, people make very different decisions than what the system may assume for them.
Yeah, and you say that better end-of-life care could save the country billions of dollars. How do you figure that?
Well, what we have learned, and in this book what we explore, first of all, is that there is a better model for patients with advanced illness, and that's what we're really focused on in this book, is that later stage when patients have advanced illness. Advanced illness occurs when people's progressive or chronic illness starts to lead to repeated hospitalization, more and more difficulty just kind of getting by and daily living activities, and medical treatment can't change that much. So we're you know, this isn't necessarily end of life. This is really the last two, 3 years of life that whole spectrum of time, when medical care can certainly keep people going, but the effectiveness of that medical treatment is not as good as patients may want it to be, as good as health professionals would like it to be. And what's important to the patient at that point becomes really something that we need to be focused on. So there have been organizations across the country, Gundersen being one of them, Sutter Health out in California, the Aetna Insurance Company, and others, who have really focused on a different model of care for this stage of illness and for this group of patients. And what they really propose doing and have experimented doing is offering these patients a different model of care.
Yeah. So what is that different model of care? How does it work?
Well, the different model has, first of all, starts from the premise that particularly at this point in a person's life, care has to be far more patient-centered because, as I said, there's so much variability among patients in terms of what they find important. And so this model of care has some specific characteristics to it. First of all, there needs to be in-depth conversations about future medical treatment and care options for the patient. This really goes beyond the standard advanced directive document that patients are typically fill out. This is really sitting down with a health professional and really talking about what that patient's experience is, what their goals of care may be, how are things going for them, and what do they foresee for the future, what human things are important to them, and how medical care may help them achieve that. It also requires a much higher level of coordination of care across all settings of care. When you're relatively healthy, the coordination of care across, you know, the hospital, the doctor's office, the home health, whatever you may be receiving, is relatively easy to do. Things typically don't get too mixed up. But when you have advanced illness, you're on a lot of medications, you have a lot of symptoms, it's very easy for things to go wrong if care is not coordinated across settings. So in this new model, care coordination is an essential part, and it has to be highly coordinated across all settings. There has to be support at home for these people, either by phone or in face-to-face visits. There has to be the ability to tailor the plan of care for each individual. This isn't about doing everything or doing nothing. This is about deciding which things will help the patient and which things no longer make sense, either because they lack any benefit for that person or the suffering the treatment's going to cost, this isn't worth it anymore. And what we need is a system in which we can tailor the interventions and the treatment simply to that individual's experiences, stage of illness, and goals of care. And then we need to really have a very successful and careful management of the symptoms. So that's the model that we need for this stage of illness called advanced illness. And when you do all of that, a couple things are achieved that are really important. First of all, you prevent that person from having as many acute episodes that require going to the hospital. You simply prevent that person from getting seriously ill again and again and again more times. And that reduces the cost of care, but not by denying the patient any care. It's by actually preventing the kinds of things that the patient doesn't want to happen, which is becoming seriously ill and perhaps getting in a life-threatening situation.
Yeah, how does it prevent repeated episodes?
Well, if you're managing the symptoms, for example, much better at home, people don't get into a pain crisis.
Okay.
So they don't say, oh, my God, I can't stand this anymore. Well, what do you do at that point? Well, the only system we have at that point is to come to the emergency room and perhaps the hospital. Or if the patient gets mixed up with their medications at home because they're taking multiple medication and they're not either taking something they should or they're not taking it in the right way, and all of a sudden, they're short of breath. Well, what do you do then? Well, you come back to the hospital. So there's lots of ways through better coordination of care, better symptom management, that we can simply prevent people from having to come to the hospital. And because care at this point in a person's life is so complex, these kind of care coordination and symptom management become really important. And while they're an extra service for people, and they're in that sense an extra expense, they're a much cheaper approach, but they're also much better for the patient. Patients don't typically want to come to the hospital and be acutely ill and seriously ill, one, because it's life-threatening in itself, but also because they're away from their family, they're not feeling well. The other thing that this does is that by good, thorough conversations about future health care, we become to understand better what are the limits, what are the points at which this patient would say, I can't do that anymore. And we can then more carefully match what we do for the patient with what the patient wants us to do for them. And what Americans say almost across the board is, I don't want to die hooked up to machines.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we really can provide them all the treatment that will help them live well and live as long as possible, but we don't put them through some final hospitalization in which they're hooked up to a ventilator and other kinds of interventions, which only leads to their death in any case, if we can prevent that, that also reduces the number of hospital days that we use, which is, of course, the most expensive care there is.
So, Dr. Hammes, this system, it was, I would think you would say, unfairly labeled the death panel in the healthcare reform talks, isn't that
well,
right?
Well, it was wrongly labeled the death panel, because this care is about helping people live well according to their own preferences, according to thoughtful treatment plans. This is really providing people more services and the best kind of services that will help them at this stage of illness. Our current system simply doesn't do that. So not only is the current system far more expensive than it needs to be, it's poorer quality than it should be.
Yeah. So why do you think Gundersen Lutheran Health System is one of the few places that does this sort of thing?
Well, if you look at the systems who are experimenting with this and trying this, they tend to be not-for-profit systems. There is no payment for this right now. We take a loss on this kind of care.
Mm-hmm. But you are hopeful with this book and with your efforts that others will follow suit?
Yes, that's really the purpose of the book, is to bring together the literature on this type of care. The literature is out there in medical journals. It's spread out in almost as many journals as you could think. So the individual articles by themselves may be exciting and impressive, but the combination of this information has never been pulled together in one place in a book before. And it really needed to be not only brought together in a book so that everyone could take a look at it in a kind of accessible fashion, but it also needed to be written at a level for a general reader. And that's what this book attempts to do, at least, is to not only bring this literature together, which is very rich and I think very exciting in terms of the way we could improve the quality of care, but we've tried to write it in a way which is accessible to a general reader so that you don't have to be a healthcare policy analyst to understand what these authors are talking about.
Our guest is Dr. Bud Hammes, Director of Medical Humanities at Gundersen Lutheran Health System in La Crosse. He is also the director of its Respecting Choices program. He is the editor of the soon-to-be-published book, Having Your Own Say, Getting the Right Care When It Matters Most. And we're welcoming your questions about getting the right care when it matters most. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up later today, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. And after 5, in honor of President's Day today, Ben and his guest will look back at the men who have served in the nation's highest office and discuss the historical rankings of the presidents and wonder who is your favorite president. That's after 5 this afternoon. We are talking with Dr. Bud Hammes, who is the editor of the book Getting the Right Care When It Matters Most, which will hit bookshelves next week. We are talking about how a patient's end-of-life wishes are not often carried out, maybe because they aren't known, and families get torn apart by this. Lots of money is spent unnecessarily because of this, and we are finding out how patients and family members and doctors can best handle these end-of-life issues. And we're welcoming your questions and your experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And Dr. Hammes, our lines are full, so let me take our first caller, Rick in Madison. Hello, Rick, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy and Dr. Hammes. We had a situation. My mom passed away a year ago last November, and our situation pretty much fits exactly into this mold. She was 85 when she passed away. She had had continuing health problems that would lead periodically to a hospital visit. And each time, the situations were worsening, and it seemed like when she would go into the hospital, then we would kind of lose the ability to make decisions. And like you had said before, you get thrown into the system, and they have protocol that must be met. And we felt like we were losing the ability to decide in which directions we wanted to go. And in her last episode, she had went just for a doctor visit, and they had said that she had her congestive heart failure was worsening, and she should go to the hospital. And we had just had a discussion like a couple of months earlier with her and decided that that was no longer going to be an option. And but I think the healthcare professionals need, you know, more education in this area, because I think my sister at the time felt chastised by saying, no, we're not going to take her to the hospital. We're just going to take her home. And she went to a sister's that weekend and hospice that Sunday and passed away the following Wednesday. And that was the way she wanted it to happen. But we felt we were bucking the system to make her wishes be.
Rick, I'm sorry for your loss. And when you say your sister especially was chastised, it felt that like you don't love your mother because you're not sending her to the hospital?
Right. How could you not take her to the hospital? And she was ready to die. And not... She was ready to let go, and so we felt judged by our decision.
Yeah.
And I think there needs to be a parallel system. There needs to be a system that honors your request and that honors your wishes.
Yeah, Dr. Hammes, let's get a reaction. That sounds kind of what you're talking about, Dr. Hammes.
It's exactly what I'm talking about. And, Rick, I'm sorry to hear not just about your mom's death, but what you and your family had to experience and go through. This is exactly what many of us around the country see as a frequent kind of story or event. And it saddens us because we know that the health system could do much better. What this book actually gets at is something that takes the concepts of hospice and pushes them back to a much even earlier time, and allows patients and their families to have the kind of support at home, which is really important at this stage of illness, without necessarily giving up or giving up the access to other medical care at the same time. because in that last stage of illness, there are often things that can be done which are really important. It's just that we don't need to use them as often as currently happens. So we can both provide the ongoing support to the patient and their family at a much earlier time, still provide them access to hospital care when that's absolutely needed and wanted, and improve the quality of life for both the patient and the family. That's the argument in this book, is that we can do much better than we currently are. And the interesting and I think dramatic thing about this is that even though there's more services provided and even though the quality of the patient's experience and the family experience can be improved, the overall cost of this is actually lower.
Rick, thanks again for your call. Is there, Dr. Hammes, on the part of medical professionals, maybe doctors, a reluctance to give up on a patient, thinking that people will think that you're giving up on a patient?
Well, I do think that there is some of that, but it's the structure of our health system right now is either you stay in the kind of acute care process of care, or you move into hospice. And it's a very stark either or decision for both the physician as well as the patient and family. We think that that's a false dichotomy and a false unnecessary decision. We think it's actually possible to say you can have both of those things. Once you reach a certain stage of illness, not only should you have both available, but it's possible to provide both. So it isn't that in Rick's case, they kept going back to the hospital, and then finally, as his mom's illness got really to the end stage, they moved into hospice care. And hospice care has been a wonderful, very supportive and important model of care for the very end of life. What we're learning is that we actually need to push that model of care forward and make it much available much earlier, without this dichotomy of either or in terms of the kind of treatment plan that might emerge. And so I think part of the dilemma from a medical professional point of view is that doctors, when they're offering choices to patients, say, well, we can continue on the path we are, which is coming back to the hospital and having this acute care services when you're not feeling well, or you can move into hospice. So that feels like it may be giving up from the doctor's perspective. What if you could say, we're going to provide you this supportive care, and when you need to come to the hospital, it's here.
Yeah.
That's a much better system. And I think intuitively, policy people may assume that this costs more money. And what those of us who have experimented with this model are care or finding is that because it prevents unnecessary and unwanted hospitalizations, the overall cost is actually lower.
Let's go to Dorothy next in Milwaukee. Hello, Dorothy.
Hi. We did just what the doctor is proposing. My husband was a professional health care provider, and he had end-stage COPD complicated by congestive heart failure. We sometimes had paramedics 2-3 times a week because Wesley at that point was in and out of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally said to me, Dorothy, why don't we just get hospice in? Because I want to be comfortable and I want to be at home. I want to stay where I can see the birds and the dog can be with me. That's what we did. We got hospice in. They made Wesley very comfortable. They sent in a clergy person to go over everything with us. And I'm not going to say it was a wonderful experience, but I will say it was a much easier experience. And they were there to take complete control because I myself have am on dialysis 3 times a week, and I was having to leave Wesley alone at that time. So I would cut my dialysis short so that I could get home to be sure that he was comfortable. When we got the hospice people in, they eased that. I didn't have to come home. I knew that Wesley was comfortable. I knew that he was eating. And so I just want to say that I completely agree with the doctor, completely.
Well, thank you so much, Dorothy, for sharing your experience. And again, I'm sorry for the loss of your husband. Dr. Hammes?
Well, thank you, Dorothy. And I think these stories are important for people to share because that's the observations that and the research shows that this does provide the kind of support that people need at this point in their illness. Our current system doesn't typically provide that. The support obviously is not just healthcare or medical support. It's also emotional and spiritual support, which is a big part of how people go through the illness that they're experiencing, as well as their family. One of the really, I think, important things to point out here is that there often is assumption that if you adopt this model of care, or even the model of care that I'm recommending here, which allows you to continue with hospital treatment when you need it, but also have the supportive care, that somehow you're giving something up, and that this will lead to an earlier death. The evidence actually doesn't support that. People who get this kind of supportive care either have about the same length of survival or life, or they actually have a longer survival. There's a really important study that was done in Boston and published about 2 years ago or a year and a half ago with patients with end-stage lung cancer. And these patients were randomized into 2 groups. One group got the standard chemotherapy approach and just that, and the other group got the standard chemotherapy approach plus this kind of supportive palliative care. The people who got the palliative care, in addition to the chemotherapy, stopped their chemotherapy sooner, went into hospice sooner, had a higher quality of life, and lived 3 months longer. So they had a clear survival advantage over those who just got the standard chemotherapy approach. So one of the really important kind of myths about this kind of supportive care is that somehow you're giving up something and it's going to lead to a shorter life, when in fact it doesn't either change your life expectancy or maybe actually increase it while also improving the quality of life because you're staying at home, the stress on your family is lower and things like that.
Pete in La Crosse emails, I'm sure the healthcare system will do as the patient and family wants as long as the family knows what they want. My dad, his wife, and I spent an evening talking about this. When their times run out, I know what care they want and don't want. You must talk about this with your parents and your siblings. Good advice, Dr. Hammes?
It is good advice, and thanks, Pete, for the affirmation from the health system in La Crosse. We have been working on this type of care for 25 years, and I've collected a lot of data and published a lot of findings on the outcomes here in La Crosse. And indeed, what Pete reports is what I see in our findings in La Crosse, is that not only is it very common for patients and their families in our community to talk with each other, partly because they have the support and assistance of the health systems here in La Crosse, but also we've worked on making sure that when we do know the patient's wishes and the family understands the patient's wishes, that the treatment and care that's provided are comparable or comparable to what the patient wants. What I can tell you is that that's not what the data supports in most of the United States.
Right. So La Crosse is unique in that you have the health system and the families on the same page here, and everybody knows what everybody wants.
Right. So Pete's right. I think his recommendation is that it's really important and most important for families and to talk and to get clear about this. Now, a couple things that are important is that these conversations are complex, and most people are not sure exactly what should they talk about, what plans make the most are most important. And that's why we have actually trained health professionals in La Crosse to assist and to help facilitate these conversations, to really guide patients and families in those conversations so the conversations actually deal with the right content and at the right level and so forth. That's not true in most places in the country.
I was going to say that there was a piece, it's a couple years ago now, that NPR did a report on why La Crosse, Wisconsin is the best place to die.
Yes, I would call it the best place to live, because that's
yes.
really what we're really focused on here, is that we're not focused on people dying. It's not, we want to help people live as well as they possibly can up until their death. And that really means understanding who each and each individual patient is. As I said, again, there's huge variability among patients in their ideas about what's important in this last stage of illness. Some patients want all of the medical care they possibly could get. They don't care what the risks are. They don't care what the amount of suffering they have to go through. That's what they want. Other patients maybe want to spend more time with their family, and being in the hospital, going to the doctor's office, even if it could extend life by some days or months or whatever, is not important to them. What we want to do is try to individualize our care so that we are providing the medical care that really helps that patient achieve the values and goals that are most important to them.
Well, let's say that a listener doesn't live in La Crosse. What is it that we can do if we don't have a healthcare system that is getting it right like you are in La Crosse? What should we do?
Well, I think, you know, one of the interesting things is most patients don't take time or don't have an opportunity to talk with their doctor. I think it's really important to get information from your doctor about, particularly as your illness gets more serious, what can I expect? What can I hope for? What can you do? And to communicate values, if you hold them, about what you think is most important for you, and ask your doctor to help you think about a plan of care, which will help you achieve your personal goals. It's been my observation that both doctors and patients and families can very easily get caught up in kind of the medical culture of treating the disease. Ultimately, what we really need to think about is treating the person who has a disease. And that's why we have this very simple question, which is, how can we help you live well at this point in your life? What does that mean for you to live well? And once we identify what that living well means to the individual, what medical care can we provide that would help achieve that living well? So I've in talking with many patients, there are some patients who say, I want to live until my grandson graduates from high school. I want to be there at graduation. They have that goal as something. So how can medical care help you achieve that? Someone might want to go on vacation with their family as a final thing they want to do. So what I think we have sometimes got a little off of field, both patients and physicians, is focusing on the disease and here's what we can do to treat your disease, when the real question has to be, how can we help you as a person live well at this point in your life?
We are talking about living well at the end of our lives, with the editor of Having Your Own Say, Getting the Right Care When It Matters Most. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question or an experience you'd like to share. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Dr. Bud Hammes is also the Director of Medical Humanities at Gunderson Lutheran Health System in La Crosse. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay with us. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn is in. Kathleen is going to be talking with Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about the latest in politics, all things political, coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking about end-of-life health care with the editor of Getting the Right Care When It Matters Most. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions for Dr. Bud Hammes. And our next caller is Gary in Ripon. Hello, Gary.
Hello. I actually have two things. The first is, I know you said this goes beyond having living wills and advance directives, but I was wondering if you think patients should still actually have those. And the second part is, you're talking a lot about professionalism versus, you know, with the doctor and the patient and that kind of thing, when in fact, at least outside of La Crosse, the business of America is business, not professions. And if lower quality care makes for more business, that's what we're going to do, because we don't think there can ever be enough business. So as that part, I was wondering how you kind of deal with that larger cultural force.
I'm not sure I understand, or listeners understand, what you mean, Gary, by it's all business outside of La Crosse.
Well, my increasing experience, and I don't go to see medical people very much, but I can remember when hospitals didn't advertise, when doctors didn't advertise. Now they do, and they're not saying come to me because really we take, you know, they're pushing for more and more and more care, whether I really want it or not.
I get it. Dr. Hammes?
Yeah, thanks. Those are great questions, Gary. Very perceptive of you. For your first question, you're right. The conversations that I'm really promoting here for people with advanced illness are much more in-depth and much more specific. We still recommend that people complete a power of attorney for healthcare. A power of attorney for healthcare is a legal document that allows you to appoint another person or persons to act on your behalf should you ever become incapable of making your healthcare decisions. Those people are called in the state of Wisconsin healthcare agents. And the other part of that planning, at what we call kind of a basic level, which is appropriate for healthy adults, is not only to appoint a healthcare agent in a power of attorney for healthcare, but to think about at what point a severe injury to your brain, if it were permanent, from which you would never recover, how bad would that have to be for you to say, if I had that level of brain injury and I was never going to get any better, I wouldn't want the goals of my medical care to keep me alive in that condition. Again, people have different views on that. The reason that particular issue is important for all of us is that it's one thing, while it's, you know, not common to happen, when it does happen, obviously the person can no longer express their values, goals, preferences to anyone. And so family members are left guessing, and it's a terrible thing to guess about. So I really strongly support, and nearly 90% of people who die in La Crosse County have a power of attorney for health care, in addition to these other conversations. So we really do support people completing a power of attorney for health care. So appoint someone. And the person that you appoint, think about that appointment very carefully. It shouldn't be only someone that you trust greatly, who knows you well, but it needs to be someone who can make very complicated decisions, sometimes in very stressful situations. Yeah. So the person you're most close to may not be the best person. I mean, when I've raised these kind of, I call them qualification questions, People say, you know, my wife or my husband isn't really able to make difficult decisions. They just aren't comfortable doing that. Maybe it would be better for my brother or my adult daughter to make those decisions. So you need to pick someone who is a good decision maker, who is able to maybe stand up to a strong-willed health professional or health system and represent you. And then really talk with that person about when a serious permanent brain injury would lead you to consider the goals of care to be changed. Now, to your second question about professionalism and the business of healthcare. The reason this book is being written is because currently in the United States, we live largely in a fee-for-service system where doctors and hospitals and other health organizations get paid for doing things. And so the kind of care that we're recommending actually reduces the opportunities for billing. And what we really need to look at is not only can this model of care be expanded to many more places, but we have to find a different way of paying for care. And we have to start paying for quality and for outcomes rather than for just providing a service. Because just providing a service doesn't mean you're actually and always helping the person that you're taking care of.
Thank you, Gary, very much for the call. Jean in Appleton is with us now. Hi, Jean.
Oh, hi. I want to bring up the matter of the three different Medicare types of payment. There's Medicare with a supplement, and there's Medicare Advantage, and then Medicare Hospice. And my husband passed away a year ago, and he had been on hospice for a while, in his final year, and then felt considerably better, and so we went back to using our Medicare Advantage plan. Now, the problem was the hospice palliative care nurse had been coming to the house, and she said, oh, you have an appointment with your doctor the second day of next month, and why don't you see him first before you make this decision and then decide, because you can go on and off hospice at any time. So we did that. We saw him on the second day of the month. Well, a little later, we discover that Medicare, if you have even one visit in a month, hospice bills you for the entire month. And even though you're paying a pretty good premium for your Advantage plan and thinking you're covered as you had been all along, you're not. And so every visit that he had during that month was billed to us. And the Advantage plan wouldn't cover it because they said he's under hospice and the hospice bills for the whole month, even if you only have one visit.
So that doesn't seem fair to you, Jean, or it's overly complicated?
Well, it's very complicated because Advantage plans have are different.
Right.
And there's one other thing I'd like to say. And that is ThetaCare, and they were very good, and they have a similar approach to the one the doctor's describing. And they are into a pilot program now for the outcome-based health care. They're just starting it. But it will only be carried out with patients who are on traditional Medicare with supplements. And Medicare Advantage plan people will not be allowed to participate in it.
Well, Jean, thank you for pointing this out. Dr. Hammes, is this a problem? Do there need to be some changes with Medicare to best deal with this?
Yeah, it's an area that I don't have great expertise in, so I'm going to resist making any comments. But first of all, it's always distressing to hear the kinds of distress that people have over the financial and billing part of healthcare, whether they're in Medicare or any other insurance plan. It's always amazing to me, working in healthcare, having a PhD, how frequently I don't understand what the bills mean, and it takes a lot of time to figure them out if I can figure them out, and often I need to call and ask people, what does this mean? And it would be, I think we would all appreciate if we had a more transparent and easier to understand billing system. But relative to this specific question, this is the kind of thing actually this new model of care hopefully would prevent from happening, where you're either in one kind of billing system or you're in the other kind of billing system or one insurance program or another. I mean, there shouldn't be these not only medical kind of barriers between either doing one thing or the other, but the financial and billing system would make it possible for you to see your physician and get the kind of hospice support that you need at this point. That would be the ultimate goal here, to make this far less confusing, not only on the medical side, but also on the billing side.
Gene, thank you for the call. Next, we go to Jill in Madison. Hello, Jill.
Hi. First of all, thank you so much for a very needed conversation about this subject. I think this is a great show. I was calling in to reiterate some of the things that you've said about this sort of dual pathway that can happen at the end of death or end of life. My mom passed away a couple years ago, and she was in a small hospital outside of the Madison area. And when it was time for a hospice, it was also decided it would be too traumatic for her to actually be moved from the hospital. So hospice came into the hospital, which seemed fine to me. The next move that was made was that the hospital virtually had to put all authority over to hospice and take it off of the hospital itself, which seemed strange to me, but I didn't quite get it. Well, through the next couple of days, what was really interesting to watch was this dichotomy between the healthcare hospital professions and the healthcare hospice professionals. And it became very evident that the healthcare providers were, by their very being, their goal was to provide healthcare and to do everything they could to make the patient better. And the hospice people, their goal was to do everything they could to make the patient comfortable, irregardless of what it did for making the patient better. And it was interesting to see where those two completely different paths would take and the conflict that happened with them every now and then. One really small example was it was very, very painful for my mom to have her blood pressure checked. Well, at one point, it became irrelevant to have a blood pressure check, but that's what healthcare professionals do.
Right. And because we're almost out of time, Dr. Hammes, a comment on
well,
Jill's experience?
Thank you for this story, because it is a very clear illustration of how this division between two pathways can interfere with good care. The goal of this book is to say the distinction here needs to be broken down, and so that we can do, you know, if we had something to help this patient live longer and keep them comfortable, you know, that we should be able to meet both of those goals at the same time by all health professionals involved.
Yeah. In our final minute, do you think that other healthcare systems will follow your lead?
Well, I think so. This book and the foreword to this book is written by the co-directors of the Coalition for Transformation of Advanced Care. This coalition now has 70 organizations of national reputation who are supporting this new model of care, both in its development as a clinical model as well as developing the policies and financial changes to make it possible. So I have great hope we're going to be able to achieve this here in the near future.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks.
Dr. Bud Hammes, Director of Medical Humanities at Gundersen Lutheran Health System in La Crosse, Director of its Respecting Choices program, editor of the book Having Your Own Say, Getting the Right Care When It Matters Most, which will be published next month. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Rob Ferret for producing the hour. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.